no matter how badly we want to, and for some women, and I was one of them, so I completely empathize and understand, you can't out-train postpartum. You could lie on a floor and do 100 crunches every day, and if those crunches aren't appropriate for your body and where you're at and you didn't build up to that crunch, it's not doing you any favors. So taking the time to just allow yourself to embrace postpartum and lay that foundation first in those early stages, or whenever it is you're taking the time to address these things, is always going to be the key to success, is to lay the foundation and then progress from there.
You're listening to My Evolved Life, a podcast that simplifies health and fitness and helps you maximize your life. My name is Vuna Nguyen, and I'm the creator of the Evolution Training System. We're so lucky to be living in the information age, meaning it's easier than ever to access information and find answers to any questions you may have. But isn't it confusing when you read information that's conflicting, or worse yet, just sounds wrong? I'll be sitting down with industry professionals to give you clarity and leave you with tangible actions you can take immediately to improve your physical, mental, and psychological health. Today's guest is Tara Abel. Tara is a certified personal trainer with a passion to remove overwhelm from fitness for women. She does that by coaching them on how to create realistic and sustainable goals. After suffering severe diastasis recti herself, she's become especially passionate about empowering women on core and pelvic floor health. She does that as a prenatal fitness specialist and a pregnancy and postpartum athleticism coach. And above all that, she is also a mother of four. This is such an important topic to talk about. So with that, Tara, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
This is something that our customers, our listeners ask about all the time. So I'm super excited to have you here.
Awesome.
So the way that I understand it is what actually started as a pursuit for weight loss eventually became a life-changing shift in mindset, strength, and confidence. Mm-hmm. And along that journey, it instilled or it creates a drive to create the same kind of change or success for other women.
Yeah.
So let's start here. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and where that passion really, really comes from?
Yeah, for sure. So I was pretty athletic growing up, and I've always loved sports and wanted to continue that into motherhood. But circumstances did not really permit that. And I kind of was thrown into motherhood and really kind of lost myself. And I was, you know, really tired all the time. I felt terrible. I felt like I didn't, you know, really know who I was anymore. And there was nothing I was doing in my life that really made me feel like me. And so over the course of my pregnancies, my first two kids were 13 months apart. So I ended up gaining quite a lot of weight, which isn't something that I focus on now, but at the time, it was really hindering my life, to be honest. And so I started to decide to feel more like me, get moving again, because it was really at the point where, you know, carrying laundry up the stairs would put me out of breath. And as a former athlete, that was not okay. So when you have really limited time, you kind of have to do the best you can with what you have. And so in the beginning, I found that even though I had been athletic, I didn't have any idea where to start. And so through a lot of trial and error, I sort of, you know, it became pretty clear very quickly that all of the sort of really intense exercise that you see out there, a lot of that is not really suited for people who haven't exercised since high school.
Yeah.
And it's not really super helpful for women who have kids that don't have a lot of time. That can't worry about every bite they're putting into their mouths or whatever it is, or, you know, having all this access to equipment or even a gym. And so so I really found a way to make these changes into habits. And in over the course of that, I did address my weight loss. But more importantly, I really just found this newfound confidence and ability with my in my body and in my own skin. And friends and family started to notice, and I started to, you know, want to help other women to realize the same thing, because I realized so many of us are going about it in this very all or nothing manner, and it seems so unachievable and so daunting. And it was really, really small things that, you know, that I did and that I believe you can do over time that add up to be this, you know, the life that you're wanting to have, and that it's so much more than just weight loss or just aesthetics. It's really this feeling of freedom in your body and in and supporting your mental health, your emotional health, and doing something for you in motherhood. And that's what I became really, really passionate about.
I really like that, because the way that you approach it, it just sounds so practical, right? We have these false expectations put on us by social media and all the information out there nowadays, right? And the other thing I really like is, and it's also going to address one of my concerns, is you are teaching not only from a place of knowledge, but from a place of experience. I think that is very, very important, especially when it comes to things like diastasis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've seen, you know, it is my business to kind of look through and observe what other people are doing or saying. And I've seen people, or women specifically, talking about diastasis never having had children, right? That would be no different than me talking about it. I would never, because I can't share, I can't relate, right? And that's so, so important. So jumping right into that, let's talk about the diastasis. Mm-hmm. Is it okay if I call it diastasis?
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect. So let's get into the high level science. What is diastasis? What does that look like?
Okay, so diastasis recti is the thinning of the fascia between the rectus abdominis. So the rectus abdominis are what most people think of as their six-pack muscles. And in between those muscles, there is fascia. And fascia is a tissue. And when you're pregnant, it's completely, completely normal for your rectus abdominis to expand and accommodate your growing baby. And for that fascia to thin out. And 100% of women have it. In pregnancy, it's really a buzzword now, and there's a lot of fear behind it. But we don't need to be afraid, because it's super normal and it's what our bodies are supposed to do. But what can happen after is that for some women, naturally it will resolve on its own. And by resolve, it's important to know that I don't like to think of diastasis in terms of being healed or unhealed. And we can get into that, why that is. But basically, in terms of function, what you can do with your diastasis. And so for women, for some women, they're able to resume their regular activities without any symptoms, with a very functional diastasis, and their body will handle that on its own. For some women, for various reasons, and a lot of things that are beyond their control, mm-hmm. They will have a diastasis recti, that separation, that does not become functional, and it can cause them symptoms and be something that can be very difficult to deal with. And I think part of the reason why it is so scary for women when they hear that, and was for me personally, was because there isn't a lot of information surrounding it. And we went from people being so clueless about it and having no idea that this could happen. And so there was this whole, do what you've always done, jump right back into it, get your body back, all of these messages that were very much, sure, that was what women were being sold after birth. And no one had any knowledge of it. So then if you did find out you had diastasis, it was very scary, because you're going, well, no one told me what's happening. And, or maybe you're experiencing symptoms and, you know, it's hard to find answers. And so we went from that to everyone having these answers and giving these very black and white, you know, don't do this in your pregnancy if you don't want to get diastasis, which is impossible because everyone, right, has it. Don't do this after if you don't want to make it worse. Here are the exercises A, B, and C if you want to heal your diastasis recti. And it became very much this obsession with closing the gap between the abdominis and not really a lot about what having diastasis can look like, mm-hmm, and that we don't need to be afraid, and how we can help these women to do everything that they love to do with a diastasis that may or may not ever, it's never, your body is not going to go back. We can't go back, but we can go forward. And so it's giving those women who have diastasis and are experiencing that separation the tools to move forward with that and for them to understand what function looks like for them.
So it sounds like it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So because you have that abdominal splitting, I want to ask maybe an ignorant question. I simply don't know very much about it, but is there a range in severity?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. And so I'll talk a little bit about what function can look like, because that's important to understand. So a lot of times people will think that diastasis has a lot to do with the gap between the rectus abdominis. And you'll see a lot of people measuring it with their fingers. There's a lot of, I have a two-finger separation, a four-finger separation, right? And the higher the amount of fingers go, the more and more people are freaking out. But that's actually not what would make, so in terms of severity, there are different things that you would look for. So, okay, so that would depend on how much is it impacting your life. And so for some women, and it can often be confused as well with the aesthetics of having diastasis, mm-hmm. which for some women would think that the more your belly protrudes or hangs out or whatever, you know, you'll see it called mummy tummy, which is a term I hate. But you'll see it called that. And so people will think, oh, well, she's got a very severe diastasis. But it actually doesn't necessarily have to do with each other. So you can have more of a protruding belly with a diastasis because those tissues are lax. It is possible. And so at a very, you know, without playing into fear, at a very severe level, it can be that your belly is quite, does protrude quite a lot. You can look, you know, 5 or 6 months pregnant, and there's not a lot of support there for your internal organs necessarily, potentially, but that's where we get into function. It can also be as, you know, as present as having one, you know, it's considered diastasis if you can fit two fingers in between. But the thing is that there's so much more to it, because then when we talk about the function, you could potentially have a four-finger diastasis and be functional, because what function means is, you know, is that the ability to do the things that you're wanting to do. So can you engage your core in an exercise? Are you able to live your life without symptoms? You can retrain the core. And it might look a little bit different. You might never fully have the rectus abdominis back together. But it doesn't mean that you don't have a functional or healed, you know, if you will, diastasis. And so that's why it's kind of hard to speak to severity, because it's not necessarily, you're also looking for the density of the fascia as well, and how much it will respond under load, respond when you need it to. And so You know, so even if your rectus abdominis are quite a ways apart, you might still have quite a bit of tension in that fascia. The core is responding and doing what it wants to do. And you might not have that in someone who has a two-finger separation. Mm. So that's why, if that makes sense, it's not just about the fingers, and it's not just about, but so it really is, it's really, how does it present in each individual? It's hard to categorize.
It's very, very case to case.
Yes,
so
exactly.
There's no generalized answer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's very, very fair. So I want to break this down. Mm-hmm. It sounds like diastasis recti it may seem like it's a single event, mm-hmm. your abs split. Mm-hmm. But the way that I'm interpreting it based on what you're saying is there are still phases and components to it. So there is the phase pre-birth, and then what happens after birth. Right. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and I would say that it's actually not commonly known, but men can have diastasis as well. So can, they'll often see some of these core and pelvic floor symptoms in young gymnasts even. You know, it is possible. It's possible to just genetically have a slight abdominal separation. Mm-hmm. But for sure, in pregnancy, it's aggravated because of that pressure. So again, another factor most women can't control is when you are pregnant and your belly is expanding, the position of your baby, there's a lot of factors in that you're not able to control that are going to put pressure on the abdominal wall. And that's why diastasis recti is really a core, an issue that relates to our core, because it is it is very much affected by that pressure in the core system. And so it definitely is aggravated by pregnancy, or you're more susceptible to it. Like, I mean, it's going to happen in pregnancy, but it can happen whether you've ever had a baby or not. And again, like I said, to men as well. And then afterwards, it's kind of a, while every woman has to sort of revisit her core and pelvic floor strength and function, there are definitely some women that are going to have to take a more deliberate approach. Yeah.
I want to take a moment to say that even though this episode seems so geared to women and expecting mothers, is vital for men to understand as well, mm-hmm. what their wives or girlfriends or their spouse, whatever whoever she may be, to understand that she is going through this.
Yes.
And like you said, it sounds like the only absolute in this is you're going to get it, right? Nothing else is black or white except for this. You're going to get diastasis. Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, and then you will have it in pregnancy. It's not guaranteed that you will still be symptomatic after. Yes, yeah.
So my question for you, and this is a little bit of a deviation, mm-hmm. But as the man in the relationship, as men in the relationships, what can they do to best support their spouse through this process?
That's such an awesome question. I mean, it's going to be very individual, but I would say the biggest thing is to be open to having those conversations and to ask her, you know, what does she need, but also to take the pressure off, because I think that there is this sort of misunderstanding among, you know, everyone that, well, women have been having babies all the time, you know, it's not a big deal, we're just going to bounce back, get right back into the gym. And, you know, for some women, that is how they, you know, feel most like themselves, and they're going about it with some really smart strategies and coaching, and that can be a good choice for them. But for some women, they're going through a lot. They're not, you know, aside from things like diastasis or pelvic floor symptoms, they're also not sleeping there, which, you know, does not help anybody to make to feel good about anything that's going on in their lives. They're often not getting adequate or frequent nutrition. Their body is completely tied into this little human being that they've brought into the world. And the amount of pressure that they are under is something that I think a lot of partners don't always understand. And so to be very patient and to not add to any of the pressure in terms of, you know, pushing them to do things that they're not ready for, to get mm-hmm. back to the gym or to, you know, whatever that is, and just let them wrestle with these feelings and vocally work through them about their changing bodies, because it is something that all women, no matter what happens in pregnancy, that, you know, body image is something they're very much wrestling with.
Yeah.
And it's all very, very raw in postpartum.
There is already so much A, self-pressure, but B, external pressure mm-hmm. from social media. I beat up on social media a lot, but there is. It creates a lot of that external pressure, right? That pressure of getting back to what you used to do, like, immediately, right? But that just isn't realistic. But in hearing that, I have to say that, you know, I'm not a father yet, but that makes me really appreciate my mother. She had 3 kids, right? It sounds like it's quite an arduous journey, right? And she's had 3 kids. So you've talked a lot about symptoms. Mm-hmm. Let's really, really dive into that.
Yeah.
You said not only are you facing physical symptoms, but it's affecting your sleep now. I'm sure your mental health at some point. Mm-hmm. Let's really break it down. What are the main symptoms, if you will, of diastasis?
Okay. Do you want the symptoms for diastasis and the symptoms for pelvic floor as well? Because
yes.
They kind of go hand in hand.
Heck yes.
Okay. Awesome.
And make sure to differentiate.
Yes.
Which I know you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure. Okay. Good. So for diastasis, the symptoms are, so like I had mentioned, one of the symptoms can be a protruding belly. You know, looking 5 or 6 months pregnant, and we're not talking newly postpartum. We're talking, it's been a few months and you're not noticing any change, that can be a symptom. Back pain, hip pain, just feeling like something's not right. A lot of women will feel like their core is splitting. A lot of women, this is probably the most common symptom, and I get this from women that have had babies years and years and years ago, where they will say they don't feel a core exercise. So they'll be doing you know, whatever it is, their core, you know, they're at their boot camp and they're trying to do this core workout and it feels like nothing. And it might not even be a core exercise. It could be a bicep curl. I get that all the time where women aren't feeling their core isn't supporting them. So they're unable to perform these other exercises and be able to hold their torso still. So then they're not able to feel the bicep curl in the bicep because it takes everything to try to hold their body in a certain position. So any kind of a sign where you're going, these exercises aren't feeling effective or like what they used to feel, all of those are signs of diastasis. But especially, you know, lingering back pain, things like that, all of those can be a sign. And then in terms of the core and pelvic health symptoms. So, and the reason why I'm referring to both is because, so I like to refer to them as the four P's, as named by Gail Hulme from Lakeview Physiotherapy, who's a wonderful physiotherapist. And it's because it's easy for women to remember. And so peaking is one of those. So peaking is diastasis and it's the doming of the abdomen. So that's another one where you'll see if you're going to do even sitting up out of bed and you notice that your core is almost going into this peak, it's almost buckling, if that makes sense, that can be a symptom of diastasis as well. So peaking, any sign, you know, that you're not able to have good core control when you need it can be a sign. Then we're getting into more of the pelvic health, pelvic floor dysfunction symptoms. So then we have prolapse. So any feelings of heaviness in the pelvis, like something's not right, like something's falling out, all of those are a sign of a pelvic floor dysfunction. Peaking prolapse.
Pain?
Yes, that's it. That's the third one. So then pain. So any kind of pelvic pain, but any kind of pain that something's not right. So that could apply to diastasis as well. Any kind of pain that something is off, pain is always a sign that we need to listen. Our body is telling us something and we're going to address that. The last one is peeing. So any kind of, leaking of, urine or feces is another one. At any time, a lot of women will think, well, I'm a mom. It's okay. I'm laughing. This is what happens. I'm running. I'm jumping on a trampoline. Any time that you are leaking urine is a sign that something is up and you don't have to ignore it. You shouldn't ignore it. And you can get help and strategies for that.
So these symptoms, you said earlier that for some women, they may naturally go away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are there cases that, you know, if not addressed, they linger for years?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've had, women that are, almost at the point or are at the point of being grandmothers that are still experiencing these symptoms because nobody talks about them. Mm-hmm. And we have made it into this kind of a joke, you know, about crossing your legs when you laugh after you have a baby and things like that. And so they don't know that there's help, and they just live with it. And so, and I will say, just to clarify there, so it's really only diastasis for the most part. I mean, you will see maybe some in very early postpartum, you know, those first few weeks, you might see that you'll have symptoms like leaking or whatever that will fade as your body heals. Your body has undergone a major, major event and you do need to heal from that. So as there is healing, there will sometimes the symptoms will go away. But if your symptoms, you know, if you're a couple of months out, even if you're 6 weeks out and you're still experiencing these symptoms, they are more than likely not going to resolve on their own and more than likely going to regress further.
That is very important for them to know. So again, nothing is ever going to be black and white, but it sounds like 6 months is a pretty good cutoff to know that, hey, look, I probably have to get this addressed sooner than later.
Yeah, I would honestly recommend even 6 weeks after you've had, and I realize too that that's not always realistic for new moms. They're really overwhelmed. They've got a lot on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can book a visit to a pelvic floor physiotherapist when you are, you know, past the 6 week mark, I highly recommend it. And by that point, they can establish a really solid baseline, even though, you know, as long as breastfeeding's at play, there's hormones, there's a lot of it. But getting that baseline and just sort of looking at those symptoms, it's going to do more good than harm for sure.
This is why it's so important for me to speak to somebody like you about this. It just wouldn't hit the same if it came from a guy, from a male, right? So I understand. We've talked a lot about this, just based on the fact that a lot of our customers are women. This topic comes up all the time. There's a lot of embarrassment around it because, mm-hmm. well, you've already said, there's a lot of the time they can't do things that they used to do. But yeah, some of the symptoms like peeing and stuff like that, it might not be the most comfortable, especially if it happens in public. Let's give them a very, very positive, reinforcing kind of message. What would you like to tell them?
Yeah, first of all, I would say you are absolutely not alone. It's really important to know that it can feel very, very lonely and isolating if you're dealing with these things, but you're not alone and it's very, very common, much more than you would think. But it is definitely, it doesn't mean you have to live like this. You can get help. There is help. There's so much that can be done. If you're just discovering this and this is new for you, it is worth it. It's worth making that phone call and getting someone to watch your baby. Bring your baby with you if you need to and get the help that you need, because you can get back to those activities that you love and be able to live a life that, you know, where you're not living in fear of trying to hide your leaking or trying to avoid having to lift your baby or whatever it might be, where you can just feel free in your body again.
So I really like that. You have stated that there is actually a lot of help available out there. How, you know, if you're looking for help, you realize that you're symptomatic, you have the awareness to know that it's time for me to seek a professional. How do you differentiate between somebody who is going to be best suited to help you and somebody who may not be as good?
Right. That's an awesome question. Okay. So the first thing I would highly recommend to anyone who is experiencing symptoms or who has, who is pre or postnatal is to go and see a pelvic floor physiotherapist. And one of the things I would look for is, first of all, recommendations of positive stories from other women, for one. But the other thing, you want a physiotherapist or a fitness trainer or, you know, whoever it is you're looking for to understand your goals. And that's really important. The reason is because there are still some misconceptions to do with especially pelvic floor symptoms, but with diastasis as well, where you might get things, you know, where people will tell you, well, you can't lift anything over 10 pounds, which we know if you've ever met a toddler, that's not a possibility. No. So, you know, things like that. And so if you're getting those kind of, you know, but you're saying, well, I'm an athlete and I want to be able to, you know, run this marathon, or I want to get back to my weightlifting or whatever it is, and you have someone giving you those kind of answers, they're probably not the person for you, because you want someone who will take where you want to go. And they might need to scale you back right now, but to be able to say, okay, I see what you need, let's get you there. And this is how we're going to do that. So someone that's willing to work with you rather than just shut you down and tell you your life is over, because it's not true. So if you're getting that from anyone, whether it's a doctor or whoever, keep looking is what I would say. And you want someone who is willing to have done the research, who understands and is not black and white. Generally, the more old school way of thought tends to have that kind of a red flag to it. So anything where they're saying you can never do this again, or you can always do this, that's one I would stay away from as well. So you really want someone who's able to give you, and when it comes to fitness, this is very important. This is less about physio, more about fitness. But if you are dealing with someone who is that you're trying to look for a plan or for some answers, they should be giving you strategies. It shouldn't be, again, those black and white lists. It should be, okay, this is how you can do something. Looking at how we're doing it, looking at why we're doing it, why it's important to you, factoring that in, looking at that risk versus reward, and then figuring out how that all works together in a plan, because there is no one size fits all. It's all very, very individual. So you have to find that person that is up to date on the research, on strategies, on all the methods they have available to them, and is willing to look at your goals and make a plan and have you run with it.
I am going to summarize that. I really, and I think this does apply, the knowledge, of course, is so, so vital. It's so, so important. But in a lot of cases, empathy trumps the knowledge. Being able to work through it with you. Understanding that there are no generalizations. It's going to be case to case. Mm-hmm. They're not just going to give you a something that's by the book, right? The book is important, but everybody is different. And with that, I do want to clarify something I said earlier. Mm. Making the generalization that women who haven't had kids or men, they wouldn't be able to help, because yes, they can be extremely empathetic. They can have that knowledge. But I just want to throw that caution into the wind that, hey, look, you know, just like you said, do your research, right? Yeah. No black and whites. You don't have to be a woman. You don't have to have kids, but do the research into them. Make sure they know what they're talking about. Look into their success stories, get some other real, real solid testimonials.
Yes. And I would also say, in terms of certification as well, it's just important to know that there's a lot of people that will say that they are qualified to be doing, especially you'll find it a lot in these sort of the mommy and me classes, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not too, you know, all like most of these fitness professionals, I'm sure, are very, very well intentioned and really want the best for these women. But the very, you know, the truth is, as a trainer, when you do your certification, the information that you're given on how to properly train someone who is either pre or postnatal is next to nothing and very often not up to date. So the professionals that have that knowledge are people that have gone on to do further education, and that it is usually, you know, something that they really care to know, because that information doesn't always fall into your lap. So yeah, definitely someone, aside from the testimonials, also someone who really has taken that extra step to become educated about what they're teaching and really wanting to help, and not just assuming that all women can just, you know, are that it's appropriate for all women to just jump back into whatever it was they were doing or how they were doing it before, because that's very much not the case for pre and postnatal populations generally.
Right. So it sounds like there are two different types of specialists postpartum. There's one immediately after where you're kind of rehabbing your way through, but then there are trainers specifically who are taking you back into exercise.
Yeah, I do like to think of myself and my other postnatal colleagues as sort of bridging that gap.
Okay.
There's a lot of benefits to working with a prenatal trainer through your pregnancy, mm-hmm. to start building that repertoire of tools you have in your toolbox, in terms of strengthening your whole body, but your core and pelvic floor, you know, making sure you have a lot of strategies available to you. And then as you go into that, that postnatal phase, it is really important to see that pelvic floor physio, because they have a whole other knowledge base that fitness professionals don't have, as well as the ability to do things like a hands-on assessment and all sorts of things that I'm not qualified to talk about. But they are very much the people that you want on your team. You really, it's a matter of building that team. And so going to that pelvic floor physio, and then you can be working with a trainer during that time, but a trainer who knows how to work with the recommendations that your physio is giving you is very important. And then eventually you sort of graduate you build the foundation, and then you are able to grow from there. So then moving into there can be a professional that is able to sort of work with you through that whole process, but definitely building that team of care and having that physio, having the trainer that understands both the early phases and how to build on the intensity and to, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess sort of help you to grow and help you to
progress.
That's the word I'm looking for. Yes. To progress from there. So, yeah, so that's what you're looking for, is really to build that team.
Let's go ahead and talk about that exercise then. Of course, all of these questions that I ask is with the understanding that there are no generalizations. Okay, it's a very, very important caveat to throw out there. But we can, you know, for the most part, or in large, I'm sure there are exercises that are more safe than others to do as you're recovering or when you're in recovery. Can we talk about that? What exercises would you recommend?
Okay, so again, I love that you said that it's there are no absolutes, and that's exactly that is very much how it is. So what the way that I like to think of it is, instead of what exercises can I do, it's why do I want to do this exercise and how? And knowing what you're looking for, those four P's that we talked about, will help you to decide whether or not an exercise is appropriate for you. So that said, when you're in those early postpartum phases, it's very important to take that time to restore that core and pelvic floor connection. Really important to take that time to heal and strengthen. So any like those exercises where, and this is again where the physio will come into play, because it's very important to know that you're doing them properly, but you'll get a lot of questions probably about Kegels and whether they're appropriate. And so there is a layer of that in there, but really understanding how to properly do something like a Kegel, which is much more than what the general public thinks that it is, how to control your, get, you know, restoring that function and control of your core and pelvic floor is sort of that first base. So it's, and those exercises are going to be very different for every woman, but a lot of them in that really early phase, and a lot of people are waiting for sort of that 6 week go ahead. And I do advocate for getting that, but there's a lot that you can do that is, it sounds quite boring, but it's a lot of breathing. It's a lot of breathing on the floor and using your breath to reconnect your core and pelvic floor. And that's sort of that foundation stage. So then when we talk about how to progress those exercises, so then it gets a little stickier. So, and I want to qualify this with saying as well that even though someone could be, you know, sort of like we talked about with diastasis earlier, there's no black and whites, because we could have someone at 2 months postpartum who's, you know, able to do some of the above, you know, the exercises I'm going to talk about. And we might have someone that's 2 years and not be able to do them. Because once you're postpartum, you're always postpartum. And there's always symptoms that can come and go. And if you've never taken the time to address any of these symptoms, they might still be there. So so when we're talking about later postpartum, that's sort of what I mean by that. So some of the exercises that tend to cause people a bit of a sticking point are things that involve a plank position. So even things like a push-up where you are in that plank, that requires a lot of core strength that generally most women have to build up to. We can't just start doing those things. Mm-hmm. So that's one of them. A lot of times it will be, especially for a diastasis, twisting rotational movements. And so learning how to do that in a way that feels supportive to you and is using your core, you know, and helping your core to function is really important, especially when you can imagine on a practical level, you know, how many times a mom is rotating to pick up her kid. So that's one of them. A lot of times, jumping right back into very heavy lifting is not always appropriate. Again, building up to it. High impact exercises are another one where that's where a lot of women will feel very symptomatic. And so it needs to be addressed. Okay, let's not just bring out the skipping rope and a pad. Mm-hmm. Let's slow down and think about how we could do this in a way that's going to build up that strength so that you can skip all out and not be leaking. So things like box jumps, you know, anything that with that high impact for when, if we're talking about more of the boot camp, the for mom stuff, jumping jacks are another one, things like that. So anything that involves that high impact, which also is running as well. So running, jumping on a trampoline, which maybe for some isn't necessarily thought of as exercise, but you know, as you know, exercise in our lives are very much intertwined.
100%.
Yeah. So those kind of things, so those are some of the, those are some of the ones to really watch for. And then a lot of the traditional core exercises are just not appropriate. Mm-hmm. And which is why I would like to say that no matter how badly we want to, and for some women, and I was one of them, so I completely empathize and understand, you can't out-train postpartum. You could lie on a floor and do 100 crunches every day, and if those crunches aren't appropriate for your body and where you're at and you didn't build up to that crunch, it's not doing you any favors. So taking the time to just allow yourself to embrace postpartum and lay that foundation first in those early stages, or whenever it is you're taking the time to address these things, is always going to be the key to success, is to lay the foundation and then progress from there.
That was such a powerful message. You cannot out-train postpartum. That is going to be the one-liner of the show. I really like that. I actually want to clarify something that you said earlier, just to make sure that there's no ambiguity.
Yeah.
It's very, very clear. So you said, don't jump right back into heavy lifting. But that statement shouldn't imply that something like a body weight squat is automatically safe either.
Exactly. Right? Oh, yes. That's such a wonderful... Yeah. Okay. So that's really important to note because that's again why it's so important to teach women how to do something, how to know if their body is handling an exercise, what that looks like for them, how to recognize their symptoms. Because a lot of women will think exactly that. They'll think, well, I was doing yoga, so I'm going to go right back to it. And yoga is totally fine because I'm not lifting any heavy weights and I'm not jumping and it's gentle, right? They have this misconception that it's gentle. But ultimately, you know, and if it's causing you symptoms, it's still not an appropriate choice at the time, or how you're doing it is not the way to do it. Or, you know, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's very much not, so it doesn't really matter if if you're someone who loves to lift heavy weights, or if what you love is to run, or what you love is to do yoga, any and all of those things. And this is not to add to fear, but just on an actual level, any of those things can cause anyone, no matter how they trained or what they were like in pregnancy or before, symptoms. And it's not that we can never do those things again, because we can and we should, but we all still have to recognize the fact that birth is a huge, huge monumental event mm-hmm. on everything about us mm-hmm. and physically, especially.
Yeah. Very, very physically stressful in the body for yeah. sure. I want to ask you a question. I think this is going to be a very, very important question, because let's face it, whether it's embarrassment, the cost, or whatever the reason is, not every woman is going to seek a professional, mm-hmm. but some of them may want to get back into exercise. How can they know inherently that they are ready or getting closer to be ready for exercise?
Okay. So what I always tell my clients is that we have to look at the whole picture. So when we're considering what kind of exercise we're ready for, or that we're ready to go back to exercise, we're not just talking about that you're itching to get back into the gym. Let's look at your sleep. Let's look at whether you're able to eat properly or frequently throughout a day. Not even let's throw out the word properly, but just there's so many women that are feeding their babies, they're not feeding themselves. Mm-hmm. So they're lacking in nutrition. Let's talk about your mental health. How are you doing? Do you have support? Do you need to talk to someone? And when we're at that point where we think, okay, I could take on the gym, I could take on a workout, then what I would say is falling back on those four P's. So if it's causing you pain, peeing, prolapse, peaking, any of those, then the exercise that you have chosen needs an adjustment. It either needs an adjustment in the how you're doing it, or your body is not ready to do that, and we're going to modify it back to something that would be more appropriate for you and build that strength up to do the movement, the progression of that movement. So it really is a matter of knowing what your symptoms are, knowing what your tendencies are, and really, I think for a lot of women, once they know that, the hardest thing is to listen mm-hmm. and to respect that it's going to take time, and to respect that it's going to take time to feel like you again. And that's sort of part of the process. And it's really, really difficult. But being able to say, hey, today it's more important that I nap because I got 3 hours of interrupted sleep last night than it is for me to push myself at the gym. Or I'm going to choose to do this breathing exercise, even though I really, really would rather just be over there picking up a barbell, because I know that slow is fast, and that the more that I spend building this foundation, the more honestly, I think the quicker a lot of people are going to get there, the more symptom-free that mm-hmm. they're going to get mm-hmm. there. And, you know, the easier they're going to get back into these activities that they love.
This must be it can be such a frustrating thing for you as a professional. Setting the right expectation. You've talked a lot about how everything's so progressive, right? But when Jen, the trainer, got back into exercise and she's lifting heavy after 3 months, that becomes the expectation for you to do so, right? Where that's just not realistic. You've said it over and over. There, it is so, so case dependent. There's no black or white.
Yeah.
So you really just have to listen to your body.
Yeah.
Now, I've asked the question about somebody who is itching to get back into exercise. And, you know, when do they inherently know? So I've asked that question. Now, this is going to be a very tough question, I assume. This woman, this said woman, is itching to get back because she has that value built in her. Before she had her baby, her child, she was already physically active. She knew the importance of exercise. But now you also have a group who never had that quality. I don't want to say quality, but they never valued that exercise. But it sounds like now it's even more so important for them to get into it, to strengthen that core, to build that strong foundation. How do you get somebody to shift that mindset from going from somebody who doesn't care about exercise to somebody who puts it top of mind?
Okay, so I would say that it's, at the end of the day, it's the mindset shift has to come from the fact that it's not about exercise. You don't have to love exercise. You might never love it, and that's fine. That's okay. I'm not here to make anyone love exercise. But what I think is important is to want and choose the life that you want to live and the way that you want to feel in your body. And so it becomes something like brushing your teeth or making that appointment at the doctor that you really probably don't want to do, you don't have time to do, but you're going to do it because it's going to give you the result that you want. And so for women who feel that way, what I would suggest is starting very, very small. And really, I do a lot of shifting with women from this all or nothing perspective where they'll think that if they're not all in and they're not at the gym 5 days a week, 7 days a week for an hour lifting heavy weights, well, it's pointless. And if they're not sweating and they're not exhausted, it's pointless. And that's just not true. And there's so much that we can do with these really small things that are going to impact our health. And looking at it from that holistic viewpoint where, like I was saying, maybe it isn't that the best thing for them to do is exercise that day. It is the nap or making sure they sit down to eat lunch that day. But looking at it from the perspective of self-care, for being the best that they can be physically, mentally, and emotionally, because it's going to make them a better mom. And it might not be something that it's really hard for women, especially moms, to put themselves first ever. It's really, really hard. If they're going to, you know, choose to wash someone's pants or do their workout, they're probably going to choose to wash someone's pants. But ultimately, if you're this rundown shell of your former self and everything hurts and you go through every day trying not to pee your pants, like, you know, with back pain because you have unresolved core issues and whatever, and you have to sit on the side of the soccer field because your kids are running and you can't go on the hike with all the families, ultimately, those are the things you're choosing. You're choosing to participate in your own life. So when you make that shift away from, I want to become this gym rat who loves the gym, that's just not everybody, and that's fine. But we're not going to become the person that just doesn't floss their teeth or whatever, right? We need to become these things to live the life that we want to do. So you start small, you make really small changes. It's not an overhaul. It's as simple as, if you're not working out at all, let's get you started doing 10 minutes once a week. And then let's build from there.
That's amazing. You're just preaching now. I love everything that you just said there. And that is, again, is that word, is that expectation, right? This is what exercise is. It's always about going to the gym. It's about lifting weights. It's about 45 minutes. It's about 5 days a week, right? But it's not about the aesthetic. It's about the lifestyle that you enable, right? And you made such a beautiful distinction there. It is not selfish for you to take that time for yourself. And it may be 10 minutes a week, 10 minutes a day, whatever it is, right? But it enables you to be just that much better of a mother because you are able to participate in their activities, whether it's a hike, whether it's just kicking a ball around. So that is fantastic. Now, I don't want to use you as an example because that may create a false expectation. You do. You're amazing. You have, you know, you not only coach other women to live, cliche, but their best lives, but you also have four kids of your own. but then you also find time to prioritize yourself and find that exercise. Can you share some of your tactics? What are the tricks that you have to be able to free up that slot of time to be able to exercise however you choose to do so?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say that different tactics will work in different seasons. So again, managing those expectations, knowing that when you have a newborn, you're probably not going to be exercising every day, and that's okay. And being okay with that and choosing to do what you can do. So finding ways in those stages, finding ways to add movement into your day. So whether that's parking further in the grocery store parking lot and walking, you know, all the way across, you know, whether it's taking the stairs, it's adding that movement in. It might be doing squats beside the lunch table while your toddler is stuffing their face. So starting with that and having this mindset of self-care and movement, taking that time to eat, taking that time to sleep, and starting there. And then when you're ready to have more of a routine, starting with less and building on that is always going to get you further and set you up for success rather than doing way too much, being overwhelmed and burnt out, and then just completely quitting. So what has worked for me in the past is honestly for a very, very long time, probably much of how long I have been active now, which is coming up on, 10 years. My son is 10, since we started this. I would say it's really been 3 times a week making that a priority. So, and it has not always been, so it's not like, we need to work out every day. It's what can you give? What times work in your schedule? Look at that and then make it happen. So sometimes that'll be 20 minutes and that's all you can commit to. And if you pick those days, so you choose the days ahead of time so that you have made that commitment to yourself and you schedule it in like you would any other appointment. You know that on Monday after school drop off or whatever it may be, or after breakfast time, you're going to go and do your workout in your living room, which is my other tip, is don't get a gym membership. Do it from home because eliminate all the barriers. Don't change your clothes. Wear your pajamas. You don't need fancy workout gear. Use soup cans if you don't have dumbbells. It doesn't matter. Just get moving and eliminate any of the excuses that you have. So blocking time, like I said, has been huge. And telling your partner, if you have that support, what you need, and asking for that time. And it comes really first from a place of understanding that you are worthy of that and that you need to prioritize that self-care like we talked about. But speaking from that place and being able to say, hey, I feel better when I move my body. I need to do this. And these are the times that I'm going to do it. Can you help me make this happen? And handing the baby over, because they can look after the baby just as well as you can.
Or
and
in then, your case, 4 kids.
Yeah. Well, the older ones are pretty self-sufficient. And then you go somewhere where you can't hear them if that's a distraction for you. Some people will prefer to work out with their kids, which is definitely something that has worked for me at one point. Now, if I'm being honest, it drives me a little crazy and I really like it for alone time. So you have to know yourself and for some people, it will be going to the gym that they like because it gives them the break. And that has also worked for me. So it really just depends. What is it that you need? Do you need someone to check in on you? Do you need a buddy? Do you want the quiet time? Will the community help? Whatever that is that you need. It doesn't have to be torture. It doesn't have to be terrible. But if you set it in your schedule, like everything else, and you make yourself, put yourself on your own calendar is something I say a lot. You're putting your kids on there, putting, your partner on there. So show up on your own calendar and just start, and start really, really small, smaller than you think.
I find that I've said this a lot this episode, but I just love everything you just said there. Really just taking a practical approach, right? Remove the barriers. Schedule time in for yourself. But it's always helpful to hear somebody else say it. It really, really is. So if your friend Becky loves the gym and Marsha likes to run, that's all fine and well, right? But does it work for you? Mm-hmm. Do you have the time or the patience to drive to the gym, wait for the equipment, get stared at by guys, and then drive back home? That it becomes a 2-hour ordeal for a lot of people, right? Make it simple for yourself. I really, really like that. So, with everything that you're doing today, It sounds like you're continuing to educate yourself. That is clearly one of your values. You are helping women at large. You're a postnatal fitness specialist. You're a pregnancy and postpartum athleticism coach. What else are you doing? What is next on your docket?
Oh gosh, what is the next on my docket? Well, right now I'm really focused on growing my online business because I'm really hoping to reach women that way. Because like you said, a lot of women just, the gym isn't practical for them. And so I teach women how to get fit at home. And that's something that's really important to me. So continuing to put out programs that are accessible for those women and to grow that side of my business are what I'm really hoping to do. But eventually I would really like to give back to the community and help women who don't have the access to this information, possibly in a, you know, a teen pregnancy okay. centers and things like that. And to put on more seminars and things like that for other women at moms groups and things that just honestly, there's so many women that just say that they've never heard this before. And it just really breaks my heart. And I hope that I think the message is changing and I think that support for them is changing, but I love to be part of that message. So
I think you're doing a great job spreading that message. That's how we found you. I think it's monumentally important that people like you who have a passion for helping others in this capacity to get your message out there, because it's funny. Just last week we had Alex Gravel on the show, and we talked a little bit about gyms and how they're not necessarily conducive to the average person's success. And going back to expectations and what society is doing to people, women, as a population. Like, for instance, I posted a snippet of that on LinkedIn, and I had this young gentleman just comment, and it was quite profane, but in essence, he said, these people are bleeping just lazy. And I mean, like, I'm sure that will be true in some of the cases. Yes, some people are lazy, but in large part, people have so many barriers that stand in their way. So please continue doing what you're doing. If somebody is looking for you, somebody is looking for your help, your advice, I'm sure you're willing to give it.
Yeah.
How do they find you?
Well, I am on Instagram at Tara Abel Fitness, and my website is taraabel.com. And I'm on Facebook as well through my business name. And I would love to chat and send you in the right direction, whatever you're needing help with.
And that is Abel, A-B-E-L, not L-E.
Thank you.
Not everybody's going to be able to spell that. I shouldn't have done that. Okay, so Tara, if somebody, anybody, man, woman, is living an evolved life, what does that look like?
Oh, I think to me, it's freedom. It's the freedom to do and be whatever it is that you're wanting to be, whatever that looks like for you, without having pain, symptoms, or, you know, your time, your energy, any of that holding you back, and being able to take whatever it is that you have and turn it into whatever you want it to be.
That is excellent. Thank you so much for being on the show. I personally learned so much. That was incredible. So I'm sure they learn a lot at home as well. So thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of My Evolved Life. Guys, if you found any value at all, and I'm sure you did, make sure to subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions about this or any other episode, or you want to be a guest or recommend a guest, send us a message on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn at EvolutionVN. Oh, if you think your friends would enjoy this podcast, please make sure to share it with them. Until next time, live your evolved life.